when I was growing up, there was a particular saying that I often heard about being envious about the things that other people have or do in comparison to what the things that I might have or I might wish to do. And it's a saying you all heard about the idea of the grass being greener on the other side. From this, you get, if you you can imagine, there's somebody who's sitting there by the fence, kind of leaning over the fence, looking over and just saying, oh, you know, I've got all these things, weeds on my side and all this trouble. Look at my neighbor. He has everything fine. Everything's great and going good for him. And so it just makes a point where I can just do all these what ifs to myself. What if I had had this this opportunity? What if I could have done things in this particular way? What if all these other changes had been made and so forth? And that's usually what happens when people are there, just like I was saying, leaning up against the fence, looking at all these other things going on, seeing what our neighbors do, how they seem to be getting things going much better for themselves than others have. And what they end up doing is, you know, having this kind, almost like an envy, if you will, for the things that what their neighbor has. You know, when that really comes down to, if we have any honesty with ourselves about such events like that, if we find ourselves fence sitters like that, who are worrying about the things that we've got and comparing it with what our neighbor has and so forth, we're going to find, just like the Imitation of Christ tells us, it's not the change of a place, nor is it the change of people around us that's necessarily going to change or make things better in our lives. What's actually going to change things is the attitude that we have. You know, when it comes down to it, we are people of faith. That's why we are here. We say we believe in God. We say we worship God. We say that we trust that God gives to us all the things that are necessary for our lives, that our lives are governed by his providence. If we really put that point in practice here, then we wouldn't be those kind of fence sitters who up there and say, oh, woe is me, oh, worry, oh, bother, what if, how about, or some other things of that nature. Some point of envy to look at what my neighbor has and make that build up in my heart and soul, even to the point how it could be that some people would actually give up the practice of their faith and saying, I have everything here so hard and I'm really trying to live for God and love for God and everything seems to be going wrong. But look at all these other people here. They don't seem to be loving God and living for him, or else they're in a different religion and everything seems to go so well for them. Maybe it's better for me just to change my religion, give up on all these things, and everything will go right for me. That's a wrong attitude to have, for people of faith, and it's not a point of reality either. See, one of the things that happens for the way this worry about things, this gazing at what other people have, this affects people of faith in two different ways. It can either affect them by being envious of the people of the world, like I've been saying, that you have this point of envy and saying, look all that they have and look what I don't have. Look how much I suffer, and yet they don't seem to. The grass on their side truly is greener and doesn't seem that it takes much for them to keep it green. But for me, I just have weeds and all these other problems. I've got junk and dirt and everything else in my life. All these things taking place in my life. Woe is me. And I wish that I had all the things that that other person had. We might even see for them that everything seems to go right for them. Or they have a bit more self-confidence. They're bolder in the things they do, even bolder in sinning. It seems like these people have more friends than what I might have. That's that grass is greener on the other side. With all the misery that I'm feeling inside me, it colors the way I look at some things out here, colors it with that envy. That envy of saying, look how much they're getting, look how much they're doing. And they're not the same people of faith that I profess to be. Therefore, they must be doing something right, and I'm doing something wrong. That's where envy leads, and oftentimes leads people right out of the practice of their faith. Another thing this attitude of mind, can bring to people of faith is a suffering, or in time of suffering or in great temptation, how they handle such suffering, how they handle such temptations. Most of the time, people who are there, these fence sitters, oh, woe is me, let's look and see how other people are. They're not suffering like I am. They become either, first of all, very impatient in their sufferings, impatient of saying, what did I do to deserve this? I'm really trying. I pray my prayers. I go to church. I do all these things, and yet I'm suffering all these particular points. They start to question God's providence. Does he really love me? Does he really care? Does he answer any of my prayers? Does he even want to listen to me? He hates me. And all these other words that come spewing out from a person with such a bad attitude. Or such a person in that time of suffering, they'll be convinced that no one suffers more than they do. Absolutely nobody suffers more than they. They're martyrs in their own minds. They go through all their trials, all their difficulties, look at everybody else and say, see, they're smiling. See, they're happy. They don't have all the troubles that I do. I am miserable. I'm miserable. Everything is going wrong for me. So much so that even if somebody should come to them seeking some comfort, like a friend would do, you know, a friend coming to a friend and just wanting to at least receive some words of solace, which is what friendship should be able to do. You go to somebody like that as a friend and you say, well, I've got this bit of trouble here, and could you hear me out? No, all of a sudden this person who was suffering great temptations, who was impatient, who was convinced that nobody else has the trials they do, they won't give any time to it and say, oh yeah, you probably have something, but wait till you hear what's wrong with me. And this whole litany of all the suffering comes pouring out of their lives, bigger and bigger and stronger and stronger. That's all they ever talk about, to the point of making this other person feeling really bad that they wanted to come and even seek some point of friendship from them. We're supposed to be people of faith. And yet if we're fence sitters like this, looking out and thinking that other people don't go through all the problems that we do, when we wish we were like them, then look at just what it does, how it changes. We don't act like people of faith in that way. St. Peter seems to outline this for us in his epistle for today, this section of his first epistle that the church presents to us. St. Peter seems, and not only just seems to, he is, writing this first epistle from experience. When he is saying, there are sufferings and trials and difficulties that you go through, yes, but understand, your brethren who are in the world go through the same sufferings. If you have this attitude in the time of suffering, that is this, oh, woe is me. No one suffers like I do. Everybody else seems to be happy and fine. If I have that attitude during my time of suffering, then we're not suffering well. We're not suffering as Christians. And when it comes down to the point of recognizing that other people do suffer, we won't see it. But St. Peter at least is trying to remind them of that. Understand this particular point. These types of afflictions befall your brethren in the world. They do. Even people who don't share the faith go through these trials and difficulties. You hear it a lot today of people referring to it as the realities of life. That the realities are, yes, suffering and trial and difficulty go through with it. It's the attitude we have when we're going through those points. St. Peter is outlining for us in this part of the epistle, first of all, what these troubles can be, and then secondly, how to handle them. The Christian spirits or these times. Like I said, he writes from experience. Just think of the sufferings he went through as he wrote this epistle. To still be calm in writing this way. Not writing these particular points and complaining about all the trials he's going through, the persecution that he's had to endure, the betrayal from other people, the hardships that he's had, the times when he saw friends and members of the faith fall prey to the devil, that he feels deeply the sting of the devil working upon people. This is why he calls them, the devil, a roaring lion seeking whom he can devour. He's watched the devil devour the souls of men while they are yet alive. Having the faith, they walk away from it, either because of times of persecution or times of hardship that they can't handle because they're not people of faith, and the devil devours them. This is what he's writing them from experience here. He knew what it was like to live under the mighty hand of God, he calls it, the time of God's visitation. But for St. Peter now, instead of sitting around and envying the world and the people of the world and what they're not suffering, rather than wallowing in self-pity and woe is me, rather than doing all of that, he gives us a counsel of what we need to do something which he himself must have performed during these times of great trial. And this is why he can write of them in such a confident way, because he knows they work. He says, first of all, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. God does arrange all things in our lives, that which is seemingly good and that which is seemingly evil. I say seemingly because what is truly good for us is what helps toward our eternal salvation. Good does not necessarily have to be when things are peaceful and nice and quiet and all these things go well. I've got plenty of money in the bank, lots of food in the house, don't have to do all these particular things here. I've got friends, the work is going good, I can study well at school. Those might be times of goodness, but they may not all work toward the good of our salvation. That's the true good that's there. That's where we come to the point of being evil. Times of suffering and trial, as Christians, we're supposed to learn. As followers of Jesus Christ, we're supposed to have learned that it's in sufferings where the real goodness for our soul comes. As St. Peter closes the point out, he says, after a little while of this suffering, Christ will himself perfect you and confirm you and establish you. That's where learning how to suffer well. And, you know, for the Christian who really understands that, suffering is a good, not an evil. That's why I said it's a seemingly evil. But if we're humble, humble of heart, humble of soul, we understand that. That's why the first counsel of St. Peter during all these times of trial and difficulty is not to wallow in self-pity, not to do the, oh, woe is me, and let everybody else know, the entire world, by the scowl on my face, by the growl in my voice, that I'm going through a hard time. I had a tough time at work today. I had a tough time at school today. Everything went wrong at home today. Now, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. Be thankful to him in this time of visitation. And in fact, more than just being thankful, he says, in times like this, cast all your care upon God. I dare say few, if any, really know how to do that. They may throw a prayer up to God, you know, just see if it sticks. I'll pray for a few minutes, and if God doesn't answer me in a few minutes, then he's not listening to me. All these trials and difficulties, I'll multiply them in my mind, make them absolutely worse than what they are by my poor attitude. And that attitude won't change. I won't get the grace to change it because my thoughts for toward God are not to cast all my care upon him, but to think I'm the only one that can solve all my own problems and God doesn't care. St. Peter is saying, cast all your care upon him because he has care for you. He really does. And people of faith should know that. They've experienced it enough in their lives that when times of trial come along, God hasn't changed. He's just allowing us to suffer so that we can be perfected and confirmed and established in grace better than we've had before. St. Peter, like he says, wants us to remember, like I mentioned earlier, that similar sufferings befall the people in the world. We're not alone. But we're alone at times in our attitude. This is where people become alone in their sufferings. They develop this attitude toward their sufferings that they have. They'll go through bad times at work or at school. Something will happen. The dog may look at them cross-eyed, you know, this particular way. And so when that happens, what do they want to do? Put a banner up. I'm suffering. I am suffering so bad here, I want everybody to know that. I'm all alone. Poor me, pity me. Or like Eeyore, you know, of Winnie the Pooh fame. Eeyore. He's a model to me of this, of people who do not have a poor attitude in suffering. Oh, bother. Oh, bother. That's all he says and walks around and mopes and dumps. Is that your patron? They're all Eeyores in that way. But he's not the best character in that story. And neither is that the character, the way the life of a Christian is to be either. Walking around, oh, bother. I've had a hard time. Nobody knows how much I've suffered. Everything, everybody's been on my back all today. My feet hurt, my back is tired, all these things here. You better know that. I'm suffering today. Stay out of my way or I'm going to let you know it. St. Peter's here to tell us, you're not alone in your suffering. You're alone in your own mind. You've created this whole thing in your own mind. And now you're trying to make other people, what, turn around and have pity for you? Get out of the self-pity, and you'll find life changes. And a fourth thing that St. Peter recommends as this, because the devil comes at these times when people are wallowing in their self-pity, the devil is right there nipping at their heels. This is the time he looks for them. It is his favorite tool against mankind when they have this attitude, this poor attitude towards suffering, this poor attitude in looking at the things around them and that I'm the only one suffering. St. Peter says, resist the devil, strong in faith. Strong in faith. It's faith that does combat to the devil. We know that. We've heard that in sermons. We've read that. We've meditated upon these things. None of what St. Peter outlines for us in the epistle today is new. What the problem is we don't apply it. But there's one more thing that ties in. This is why this epistle is given to us by the church today to reflect upon. Because we just had the Feast of the Sacred Heart. This is with the old octave of the Sacred Heart. We're within this time frame right now. And so during this period of time, we're thinking more about the message of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, the mercy and the love of God. And the church wants us to think about these particular things right now and carry on now for the month of June. Have these thoughts come into our minds so we can get out of the self-pityness of being a martyr in our own mind, of having this rotten attitude in time of suffering and trial. If we would have listened and listened greatly and applied the words of Jesus Christ in the gospel, where he is telling us, first of all, to learn of me, he says, because I am meek and humble of heart. He proposes that as the first example. Learn of me because I am meek and humble of heart. Meekness of heart basically means I'm going to be able to handle sufferings. I'm not going to have an attitude. Meekness doesn't mean I walk around with my head down to the ground all the time. Meekness basically means that I'm going to have that right Christian attitude toward all things, be balanced in mind and heart. Learn of me, he says, because I am meek and humble of heart. And if we will learn those lessons, he says, you will have rest for your souls. The rest that you need, the peace that you're missing right now from that bad attitude, from that martyred point. Learn of me, for you will have rest in your souls. He tells us right up front, my yoke, watch following me, carrying the cross, being an actual servant of Jesus Christ. My yoke, he says, it's a yoke. It's something to be borne, but it's sweet. The burden is light. And when it seems to be hard, too hard, he tells us also, come to me, all you who labor and are burdened. Come to me. Don't go tooting your horn to other people, letting other people come and give you human comfort in time of all your sorrows and trials. Come to me. Don't go telling anybody how much you're suffering, making them suffer as well, justifying why you're getting so upset, why everything just has to go wrong because I've had a bad day. Come to me, he says, all you who labor and are burdened. Why? Because I will refresh you. As I mentioned earlier, so few people have learned how to do that. Hardly any Catholic have really ever done so. They've read the words. They've tried it maybe for 5 minutes. But after 5 minutes, if God did not come to their rescue, he did not come to refresh me, then it's over, it's done. He doesn't pay attention to me. He doesn't like me anymore. Why should I try it again? Oh, woe is me. I'm suffering. I'm suffering, and God doesn't even care. Jesus Christ is God. He does not lie. If we are people of faith, we learn where peace of soul is found. We learn where refreshment of spirit under time of trial and difficulty is found. It is suggested to us through this entire month, the month dedicated to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. It's to find rest in his heart. It's to find in his actions the example that you and I need in imitation in our own lives. not from human beings, not from impatience, but from the love of God, from the patient endurance of trials and difficulties, from being people of faith. So few people actually do this. And all the suffering they go through that could be such a great merit for them in eternity builds up that treasure in heaven is lost. It's wasted. It's gone. It actually starts to sour their souls instead of making them people of God, people of faith, stronger in every way. I propose to you during the month of June, because we all know trials and difficulties meet us, if not today, then somewhere down the road. During the month of June, instead of having the martyred image in times of trial and difficulty, instead of having that really poor attitude that should not be part of the people of faith, remind yourself of the words of Jesus Christ. Come to me. Come to me here in church. If you can't come to the church to unburden your soul here, then in the altar in your home, spend the time. Come to me. Don't go to other people. Come to me first. Say some prayers. Find that peace of soul that I promise you will be there if you come. If we can make that a habit during this month dedicated to Jesus, this month of the Sacred Heart, it will change our attitudes towards suffering, change our attitudes toward times of trial and difficulty. We'd actually be people of faith. We really would be. It would govern our lives every second of the day. Come to me, Jesus says. My prayer for you during this month is that you will find in those words, come to me, the great source of grace that they can be for us all. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen.